News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 6th of April, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We've got news, views, stuff you can lose, things to do's.
I don't know. It's so nice out.
It is nice out. Well, yeah, it's beautiful out, actually. It's a lovely day in my neighborhood. It's in the 50s. It's pleasant. All right, Microsoft has decided to extend the life of Windows XP again.
After it was a week ago, they swore they weren't going to.
You guys all called it. It's wonderful.
Yep. Oh, wait. Before we get started, Steve's joke. Ready? Charlton Heston died this week.
You're live. I was going to say it was in bad taste for live on the air.
Was it?
Well, Charlton Heston died this week, so, of course, they're prying the gun from his cold, dead hands.
There you go.
Hey, the man stuck to his guns.
He stuck to his guns. No, yeah.
Now they're sticking to him.
I own guns. I have no, but it was a very funny thing. Spur of the moment, very funny.
Almost as good as the He's Dead, Jim, when, DeForest Kelly died, he was the one that always said it, so it was I'm Dead, Jim.
Right. Microsoft has decided to extend the life of Windows XP, only for a limited class of machines. Microsoft said on Thursday that it will continue to allow Windows XP Home Edition to be sold for a class of computers it calls ultra-low-cost PCs. It's a category that covers machines with slower processors, smaller screens, and in many cases, flash memory for storage rather than traditional hard drives. Microsoft will give PC makers the option of using XP or Vista on these devices, according to Michael Dix, General Manager of Windows Client Marketing. Still, the minimal hardware used in ultra-low-cost PC systems might make Vista ill-suited to such a task. The decision to discontinue Windows XP might have driven even more decision-makers into the hands of Linux, hence the extension to XP. Overall, big-name computer makers are still scheduled to have to stop selling Windows XP for all other uses by the end of June. Mainstream technical support will continue to be available for Windows XP through April 2009. And more limited support will continue through April 2014. Now, here's the real question, of course. Does that mean folks like you, Dave, and you, Steve, will still be able to get XP?
Yep, till the end of the year, I've been told by my distributors.
But even past that now, if they're still available for ultra-low-cost PCs...
Hey, you know, you got to stay tuned, because this is Bill Gates' CYA.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because he just doesn't want to admit that, Vista just isn't, doing its thing, and, people don't like it, but he's dancing around all different ways, because even in that one story that I was reading, there is a big push to get System 7 out, and you can hear me now, remember me later, but what I think this new System 7 is going to be is something in between XP and Vista. They've already got the solidness of XP, and they got some neat features that they want to incorporate, but not at the high end that they're currently offering Vista. They up the power requirements and everything else, and the average, if they haven't woken up, we're in a recession. I don't care what the government wants to call it. We're in a recession, folks. People can't even afford. Matter of fact, they had it on the news again, how folks can't even afford to really go out to dinner. They're staying home, and restaurants are really suffering. You're going to tell folks they got to go out and spend an extra $2,000 on a computer just so you can have fluff? I don't think so.
Right. All right, so we'll see.
I mean, it's not even my rant yet.
I know. But there is rumor, and I don't know if I made it a story here because it's only a rumor I've heard, but that Microsoft is talking about the next version of Windows will be a complete Windows 8 then, right? Windows 8 will be a complete redo, just like Apple has done several times with their operating system.
I thought Vista was.
Well, no, not really. And that's what Gates is saying, is that we really are truly just going to give up. No more, nothing from the past. It's a full rewrite from the ground up. So our first caller is Charlene from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Charlene. What's your question?
I have a question about user profiles.
I have Windows Vista Home Premium, and one of the users on there is passworded, and the other user is not. Every time I load up a program, a game of any kind, on the passworded user, the icons in the program still show up on the other user's profile.
Well, that would depend. If the passworded user is the administrator,
Correct.
Which it should be, and in fact, both users should have passwords. But if the passworded person is the administrator and he or she is the one setting up the program, in general, with many programs, you get a choice, which is set this program up for everybody or only for the person setting it up. So you can extend across the board or just for yourself.
And for the programs that don't ask,
it's always for everybody.
It's always for everybody.
Right.
Okay, so I can't get it to stop loading up those program icons on the other person's desktop.
Unless it asks you which user do you want accessible.
Well, as the administrator,
you can always
remove them from the desktop, but you cannot remove them from the menu. No.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, I guess that's have to deal with it then if I don't have that choice.
Yep, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
It's Vista. You don't get a choice. That's how that
works. Bill Gates knows better.
No, that wouldn't work on Vista, would it? See, on the Mac, you can install an application into a user's folder,
right?
And then only that user has access.
Right.
But on Windows, it has to be installed into the root program files with registry information, right?
Right. And on Linux, you can either install it specifically for an individual, or you can simply restrict who has access to what.
In Ultima, I think you can control what's on what. Because we've done that before with the Vista Ultima. We were able to create a desktop and control what showed up on the screen and everything else.
Yeah, but now you're in the registry and you probably do that at home too, but I'm not sure that I would want to do that. I'm just saying that's not the kind of thing I like to do. Our next caller is John from Scottsville, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yeah, I have Windows XP and my desktop icons disappeared the other day and I can't figure out how to get them back.
Your icons disappeared?
Yeah.
If you right-click on the desktop...
Mm-hmm.
Which icons? Your own custom icons or the My Computer Internet Explorer type icons?
Everything. Basically the ones... Now, that
something corrupted your desktop file and they're probably gone.
A minute. If he right-clicks on the desktop, is there a check mark next to show desktop icons?
Okay, that is then...
If you just right-click anywhere on the bare spot of the desktop and you go arrange icons by, and it's always been there. And if you
when did that show up? Tuesday.
I've never noticed that before.
Never seen it before.
Well,
Tuesday.
Was it SP2? Maybe.
No. That's
always been there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you just right click anywhere on the desktop, you go arrange icons by, and there should be a check mark by show desktop.
So if you uncheck that, they all disappear.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it fixed it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Interesting.
That was easy.
Yeah. That's a feature I didn't know about. Thank you for teaching me something.
You're welcome.
And you know how hard it is to teach him anything.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Our next caller is Barry from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Hi. I am having a problem that happens randomly. When I boot up, occasionally my D drive, I have got a laptop with two drives in it. My D drive will be reassigned to another letter like H or I or something. I can reassign it back, and I know how to do that. Next time I boot up, it goes off to some other position.
Now, do you actually have two drives, or is this one drive partitioned into two partitions?
Two drives.
Actual physical drives. You know that for a fact?
Yes, sir.
Is the second drive IDE, or is it external USB FireWire or something?
Oh, no, it's IDE. They're both in the laptop.
Oh, two hard drives in a laptop? That's unusual.
It's a big laptop. It's a Toshiba, and it has a 17-inch screen.
Yeah, because what usually happens with external hard drives is the USB auto-detect will auto-detect and assign it a different letter.
No, I understand that. It's not that. It's they're both internal.
When you go to reassign it to D, how do you do that?
Go to the control panel, and I forget.
You're going into the administrator manager?
Yeah, administrator, and there, and then hard drive management.
Yep.
And then I reassign it to D, and it's good for the rest of the session. The next day when I reboot, it automatically assigns it to something like HRI.
Is something else assigned to D?
No.
What's your CD-ROM drives?
CD-ROM, yeah.
Do you also have like a card reader, you know, like one of those 43?
Nope, and I know what you mean. I do not know what the CD-ROM drive is assigned to.
That could be what's happening, is it's seeing your CD-ROM drive and seeing your hard drive and reassigning them. You may need to manually assign the letter to the CD drive so it stays static. That might help as well.
When you manually assign it, shouldn't it stay static?
Well, it depends. If, for example, when it boots up, if it happens to, and of course this is Windows, so anything can happen.
Excuse me, just a minute. I just looked to see what the CD-ROM drive is.
Yeah.
It shows it as an E.
So it sounds like something else is D and pushing forward.
The D drive as the D.
Well, yeah, but here's what often happens. When the system boots up, it really wants, Microsoft assumes that your CD-ROM drive is going to be D.
D?
Unless there's another hard drive.
Unless there's another hard drive, and then theoretically that hard drive is D.
Right.
Now, do you have those two hard drives set up as slave and master?
They're both cable select.
Try switching your C drive to the master, then put your other drive to the slave.
Okay.
And then set the CD-ROM drive to, say, master.
Well, that all depends, again, on the physical alignment.
Yeah, well,
maybe that the first IDE is C, the second on the first is D, the first on the second is E.
It won't matter, though. As long as he does it that way, the first hard drive is C, the second hard drive is a slave, and then the CD-ROM is, again, master, because it's got to be on a different channel.
Should work.
Should work.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
We should mention that the webcam is off, folks. Anybody who...
Well, it's on. It's just on a... One and a half hour delay.
Yeah,
it looks
a serious delay.
It's showing a warp in the time and space continuum.
Yes, and a lovely one as well. There, for those
Jim
of you,
Salmon.
For those of you looking at the webcam, none of us are in fact Jim Salmon.
Nor do we tend to be.
We're much better looking.
All right. Yes, collectively maybe. Imagine being able to put your entire DVD collection on a single disc, and not just in your collection, but also that of your family, friends, and neighbors. The contents, in fact, of as many as 200,000 DVDs, which might actually hold Steve's Star Trek collection, but not his porn collection. But at least it is a couple of discs.
It's a start.
It's a start. Sounds like a stretch of the imagination, but this is the aim of Professor Min Gu and his team at Swinburne University of Technology's Center for Microphotonics in Australia. They are 3 years into a five-year project. There you are, a five-year voyage. That is looking at how nanotechnology, particularly the use of nanoscopic particles, can be used to exponentially increase the amount of information contained on a single disc. Their ultimate aim is to be able to include as much as a petabyte, 1 quadrillion bytes, of data on a single disc, an amount 20,000 times greater than the amount of data currently able to be stored on a Blu-ray disc, which in itself is, of course, a high-density optical disc format. The idea is to incorporate nanostructured material and to increase the data capacity without necessarily increasing the size of the CD or the disc. Funded by a grant from the Australian Research Council, the project aims to create these next-generation discs using a number of different techniques, the first of which involves dramatically expanding the number of layers in which data can be stored. Professor Gu and his team have already experimentally demonstrated they can increase storage capacity up to 52 layers, but these are just proof of principle concepts. If we wanted to, we could go up to 200 and 300 layers.
Holy moly.
Holy moly.
Now, the geek in me has two questions.
Yeah.
Is ZFS mentioned in that article?
No.
It's not. Okay. Just curious. And the other question is, how many micro Googles is a petabyte?
Yeah. And more importantly, how are they going to fill up these new DVDs? I don't think there are enough extras filmed anymore to fill them.
Well, they'll start with Steve's living room.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, the big thing is the uncompressed. That was...
And as a bonus, every movie ever made.
Yeah. standard DVDs are 8 gigabytes, but they have to compress the movie down. That's why you still see movies like Lord of the Rings come on 2 DVDs.
Right.
The high-definition DVDs at 50 gigabytes for a Blu-ray, you don't have to compress it as much. So once we get petabyte on a DVD, you could do uncompressed and theoretically better quality yet.
Stay tuned.
Maybe.
Right. Now, if we could only get Hollywood to make movies worth watching.
Yeah, exactly. They make one or two a decade. Come on.
But don't get me started.
Exactly. Our next caller, and I refuse to believe this, appears to be David from San Francisco, California.
Welcome to America.
Hey, greetings. I'm not getting you over the stream. Those space aliens put something in my tooth, and I get every channel. It's amazing.
Well, at least they put it in your tooth. I think that's a good start right there.
Oh, yeah. There was no denying that it came from that end. I'm interested in the idea of firewalls. You know, we got tax day coming up, and so many people are going to be doing their taxes online, and, you know, it's real important that you keep some privacy. Yep. So I'm wondering if you can talk about that, and I also had a suggestion for a future show. It might even blossom into a huge topic for a lot of future shows. As we talk about different kinds of software and the changes they go through and the need that people have to buy a new computer because everything changes,
right?
There, in historical terms, there was what was called abandonment law. For example, you had a mine in some part of a state, and it all of a sudden just mining ran out, and so the company left town.
Right.
That's called abandonment law. And you know, they still have a responsibility if people fall down a hole, but if you can't find them, then, you know, it's a whole different thing. Now, when a company invents an item, say, for example, the old Model T Ford, there are still companies that are out there making parts for Model T Fords, and if Ford doesn't personally authorize it, but there are still cars out there, there can be, you know, a certain amount of patent infringement, but at the same time, if Ford refuses to make parts,
then they're allowed to under the abandonment law.
Yeah, and so the idea of computer parts, say, for example, the way that you all are streaming, and I'm able to hear it, believe it or not, there are so many companies that constantly are upgrading the streaming that old computers can't get the new stream.
Right.
So it's almost as if every time the station upgrades, they're throwing away listeners.
Yep.
And so it's, do you want to keep your listeners or do you want to throw them away?
And we're going to run into that next year, February 17th, 2009, analog broadcast television stop, and you're going to have to get a digital adapter for your old rabbit ears.
Well, and the same is true when you create a piece of software and you create it only for Windows. That's like owning a store and randomly turning away one of every 10 people who comes in your door.
Sure, yeah.
And you won't stay in business that way.
Yeah. Right, and if the economy goes bad, people are going to try to rely on their old computer rather than upgrade.
If the economy goes bad, it is going bad.
We are, not in San Francisco, they haven't noticed yet.
We are seeing people keeping their computers longer. They're not upgrading as often. And part of that is because there's no real compelling reason to upgrade,
which
is why the conspiracists among us think Microsoft released Vista with such heavy hardware platform requirements to make you upgrade.
Right. Well, and that's why a lot of people are buying Linux.
Right, exactly. And so that whole issue of abandonment law in a bad economy is really of primary importance because, say, like if you got web designers out there, say the ones that are listening right now, if they make sure that people stick with old designs or, you know, you make it flashy and this and that, but at the same time, if you're going to get into a situation where some little hardware store is thinking about making a web page, but they're going to have a whole bunch of old computers looking at it, it's a good idea to keep some version on there so that somebody who's looking for the phone
number... Don't get me started on the web developers who don't check every browser to make sure that their code works.
Remember when there used to be a text-only version of every website you went to?
Yep.
And now you have to have Flash 9 to see almost anything.
David, let's get to your question about firewalls. I think you're absolutely right. In these perilous times, what with all the people who are out playing on the web trying to break into people's machines, I think having a firewall on your machine is mandatory. Now, whether it's on your machine
or
on your own home network is a moot point to me. I don't care if it's on your machine or on your network. In fact, if you've got four or five machines, two machines, it's better for you to have one single point that you can put a firewall, you know, in your router or whatever to keep things safe. But I think it's important. It's paramount to have a firewall up there. You need to be very careful when you go to do your taxes online that A, you've gone to a legitimate site, and B, that you can see the little lock. It's got an HTTPS at the start of the address, and you can see the little lock that says this is a secure website. Those things are super important. The other thing is, who are you giving your data to? I mean, I imagine that, you know, the big ones are all bonded and everything else. So you go to, let's just say, I don't know them all. So let's just say H&R Block. You know that these people are bonded in as people, as individuals. So the website is also bonded and it's safe to go there. But you got to be very careful.
Yeah, actually, H&R Block got in some trouble about 2 months ago because of exactly that. So sometimes the big boys aren't necessarily completely safe.
Right. And the big thing to me is everybody's very careful to encrypt all the data that's going to them. They're very careful to keep it encrypted on their systems. Then they write plain text backup tapes, stick them in a truck, and send them out on the highway. Who was it who said never underestimate the bandwidth of a truck full of backup tapes barreling down the highway? And they do that all over the place. You hear about that time and time again. That's how people are getting all these data. They're hitting the trucks carrying the backup tapes. So you got to be very, very careful who you give what to and where.
And there's actually, there's an issue that we've run into with a few customers, TurboTax, one of the big software tax preparation programs. If you go to their website and it's got all these little buttons to buy TurboTax, you're actually buying a one-time online-only use. You have to scroll down in order to buy the CD that you can use for you, your wife, your son, your daughter.
Right.
And one of our customers ran into that where he thought he was buying the CD and did all his taxes online, and then he went back to do his wife's and it wanted him to pay again.
Right.
So it's a misleading website. They still haven't changed it. You know, you have to scroll down in order to find the buy the CD.
Right. Right. These are all very good points, David. Now, your job out there in San Francisco is to get all of your friends, all of your relatives, and all of your enemies to listen to us and find out why your local station is not carrying us.
Oh, I'll do that right now.
You're on it. Where do you live in San Francisco?
Oh, I'm down in the Mission District.
Very nice place.
Hey, you know, one last thing.
Back when I was there, wasn't so. Anyway, never mind. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, as we were talking about the taxes thing, to some degrees, you've got a certain amount of privacy with the U.S. government with your taxes. Hypothetically, you know, I mean, we just saw the whole thing about Obama's passport being looked at. The whole thing about your taxes being looked at is, you know, it's been a federal felony to look at somebody else's data.
Yeah.
Well, the Bush administration, of course, has been privatizing much of this. They've got a company called Choice Point, which was...
Right.
Yeah.
Which has already gotten into their own sets of trouble.
Absolutely, and this whole idea...
It's Jennings and Rawl all over again.
Yeah,
yeah, and so, I mean, personally, when I do my taxes, I do it on an envelope, and then I conveniently forget where I put it. So, you know, that's my security system, and it, you know, the whole idea of Choice Point has been selling our data. They started by selling census data and court information and a whole bunch of other things, but now they're getting into the tax stuff. So, personally, I don't do my taxes online. I stay away from that, and I try to even avoid it, you know, even on a secure computer. So, it just is, looking at this whole subprime thing, they've essentially bankrupted the economy using a whole bunch of fraudulent data. And then when you try to do your honest data...
All right, David, David, we are the one show on WHAM that does nothing political. So we do computer tech support, so I'm afraid we got to be done with that line now.
Thank you so
much. Get all your friends to listen. We need the San Francisco contingent of sound bites. Get out there and get us on. All right. Thank you, David. Appreciate your call.
I was going to say, speaking of low tech, I regularly attend meetings where virtually everybody at the long table has a laptop, and I have my pen and my notebook because the carpal tunnel syndrome prevents me from using a laptop.
Right, right. Well, I see, I go the other way. I have my tablet PC when I take notes in class and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I write it all down there, and that way I can doodle for an hour and then keep erasing it. Nobody knows that
like
I wasn't paying attention. Exactly. David is one of the most coherent people I've talked to from San Francisco. Sorry, go ahead.
This is the great story about...
Hey, stop playing! Oh, God,
it's a story about the new computer that Etch-A-Sketch is making. How do I make a new document? Pick it up and shake it.
Yeah.
How do I save my document? Pick it up and don't shake it.
Right, don't shake it. All right, our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. We're spanning the country here. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Thank you. Good morning. Easy thing here. When I get into internet options, I click on delete files and delete cookies, but all the cookies are going to the document files where they're supposed to go to the recycle bin. I cannot figure out how to get them out of the documents and go to the recycle.
Wait a minute. When you delete your cookies, they go into the document folder?
Yes. It keeps saying cache, cache, cache.
Are you sure they weren't there already? Because that's where they live until you delete them.
Yeah.
They're automatically supposed to go to documents?
Well, in a folder, it's supposed to be an invisible folder inside documents.
Okay.
They're actually in documents. You can see them in the documents folder.
When I delete cookies, it all goes to documents. So when I click on the document icon, I got a list of cache listed there. And I have to individually delete each one. And I'm trying to figure out your temp folder. To go to the recycle bin.
There's a system variable called temp, actually two of them, T-E-M-P and T-M-P. And I bet your temp variable is set to the documents folder instead of the invisible temp folder it's supposed to be. If you open a command prompt and type
set,
it will tell you what your temporary variables are. There's a GUI somewhere to set your temp variable. Probably msconfig has it.
Okay.
So that's probably what's happening, is your documents folder has been set as the temporary folder, which temporary things are supposed to go into.
So get into set then.
Right. Set will tell you what your paths for the temp files are. And we're checking now on a Windows machine to see if it's probably under msconfig or system properties somewhere.
If you right-click my computer and select properties.
There's an environment variable tab.
There's an environment
somewhere.
Variable tab, and you need to look at that. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Hey, here's an interesting thing. A Linden Lab worker. Linden Lab is part of Second Life. We had Wagner James Au on for Second Life. We're hoping to get another Second Life guy on. I'd like to hear from you people how many of you are doing Second Life. That would be interesting to know.
Put it up as a poll.
Well, I did, and nobody...
Now that we're getting into a little bit more, let's...
Right. Well, we'll see. Anyway, a Linden Lab worker put on her nicest black suit and her most formal pair of wings to help run a congressional subcommittee hearing on online virtual worlds that was broadcast simultaneously in the company's own virtual world, Second Life. Okay, that's a little confusing. Here goes. A virtual depiction of the Rayburn House office building meeting room was projected on television screens on the wall so that real-world attendees could take a look at the small virtual crowd that had logged on to Second Life for the event. Attendees logged in from Second Life, meanwhile, could watch the proceedings in a video screen projected on the wall of the virtual room. The real-world guests included executives from Linden Lab, IBM, and a tech firm that helps nonprofit organizations take advantage of virtual world. And the question was things like, could Second Life be used as a place to launder money? Are children safe in online worlds? Are the churches there? Are people making any money? Nobody's seen anybody laundering money in there. The amounts are so tiny. A Linden dollar is pennies. So you'd have to be transferring literally trillions and trillions of Linden dollars to get the kind of money that crime wants to launder. So you're not going to see that. It would be so unbelievably noticeable by the Second Life folks. So no, that's not happening. You know, if I pay 10 Linden dollars for something, that's like a dime. So yeah, big deal. And if people who make thousands of Linden dollars. There are people making a living out of Second Life. There are some people who own nightclubs in Second Life where people go to virtually dance. There are, yes,
and
brothels in Second Life. What?
And virtually hook up.
Yes, exactly. There are also brothels in Second Life, which means there are detectives in Second Life. We didn't get to talk about that with Wagner James Au, but that's the kind of stuff that goes on.
You mean Wagner?
I asked him that. He said, just call me James.
Yeah, but he's not here now.
Right, Wagner James Au. Wagner. That's my classical education coming. So, you know, the thing is that Second Life is becoming a much bigger place and a much bigger part of what goes on in the world of computer users. We've toyed with the idea of doing Second Life thing with Soundbites, you know, getting our own area and actually setting it up. And, you know, maybe it's not during the show, because that's just, my head will already explode. I'm already doing 60 things. But after the show, at some point, having a second or third or fifth or whatever it is hour on Second Life, which would be kind of an interesting gathering place.
Sure.
You know, having a lounge, a place where sound bites folks could meet and play. We've thought about that.
I like it.
I like it. I think it's a great idea. It would be kind of fun. All right, our next caller is Leah from Silver Lake, New York. How are things at Silver Lake?
Pretty cold.
Pretty cold.
Pretty cold, yeah. Yeah. The lake's still frozen.
Sure, I bet it is.
Thanks for taking my call.
Have you seen the sea monster lately?
Oh, he hibernates in the...
Yeah. My wife's family had
Florida.
Yeah, my wife's family had a cabin on Silver Lake for 50 years.
Is that the one with all the weeds because of the runoff from the farms?
Yeah. Very fertile, the water.
So what's your question, Leah?
I have a Dell Microsoft XP desktop.
Right.
And I got Linksys wireless.
Mm-hmm.
And just...
Yeah, Linksys.
April Fool's Day. I could get online in the morning, but then when I came home in the evening, my desktop keeps saying to not find server. But my kids have two laptops, and they can get online. So first I thought it was just my... I have Roadrunner. I thought that was just down, but... Not if they can get it.
Right.
By rebooting and stuff, but that's...
Now, you're connected by wire while your family is wireless, yes?
Right.
Right, because the laptops are wireless, but you're connected by wire. The first thing you want to do is make sure that wire is still in tight.
At both ends.
At both ends.
And the little light turns on.
The other thing, though, is, Leah, do you leave this machine on all day?
No.
So you turn it off when you go to work, then come home and turn it on, and it won't connect?
Right. I can, use my regular computer things,
But you can't get online, you can't use Internet Explorer, whatever.
Right.
All right, first, as Steve said, check that it's plugged in tight at both ends. Also, on the computer end, next to where it plugs in, there should be a little light, usually an amber light.
That should be flashing.
Green. Make sure that's flashing. Sometimes it's green, sometimes it's amber.
And at the Linksys end of it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it's plugged into number one, the number one light should be on. So that lets you know that at least the hardware layer is working between the computer and the Linksys.
Right. I've unplugged everything and replugged it and made sure everything was in tight because I was it better not be something stupid like that.
Right. The other thing to check is try simply plugging into a different port on the router.
And then a third thing that you can try on one of the laptops, if you go to our website, and you go to, I heard this on the show, and do a search, and we have a WinIP fix utility that if you download that, it'll fit on a floppy. You put that on your desktop of your machine, and what you do is run this utility, and what it does is clear out the SOC32 settings. So it'll reset those, reboot, and see if you get connected that way.
And that's on...
Our website at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Click on the links tab, and in there you'll see a list of the sites mentioned weekly on the show. It's number 3 in the list. So give that a shot and let us know. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave, Steve, Chris, Rob, me, Nick, all of you. Soundbites, 50 minutes after the hour, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. And yes, kiddies, I know how much it hurts you to hear this, but get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Well, I got insulted. Like I say, this happened last week, and I was already warning folks, I was brewing over this one.
Uh-oh.
Because I hate it when folks come in.
Get your hand on the dumb button, Rob.
And they want me to sit there and lie. And what I'm talking about, Skippy, you can go to some other place if you really want to, you know, have your computer fixed. But I'm not going to lie for you when it's been in, say, a fire. And you come in and want me to say that there's more damage to it than there legally is. I don't know. You could be 60 minutes with a camera crew sitting out in the driveway waiting to roll in saying, oh, yeah, I'll do it on the side. Wink, wink. Wrong, honey. I ain't going to do it. If something is wrong with it, I'll report it that way. If you don't like it, then, yeah, fine. Go somewhere else that'll lie. I just can't see throwing my whole career of working on computers and everything else just to save you a few bucks with your insurance company. Get somebody else to lie for you, because I'm not gonna. It just ain't gonna happen at this shop. And I mean, people then get porked off. Well, you know, that computer cost me this, and now they're only probably gonna give me a few bucks for it. Well, yeah, you've had the pleasure of using it for that many years, and oh, maybe you should have upped the insurance if it's that valuable to you. But, you know, to turn around and sit there and say, well, it's really worth this much. That's what you should put down. No, I'm going to put down what it's really worth. And you don't like it, take it somewhere else.
All right, Steve, hold him down. I got the needle ready. All right, here we go. All right, kitty's back. Slowly away from the rocking chair. Rinse out your hot cocoa mugs. Get out of your footy jammies. And we're putting Uncle Dave back up on the shelf for another week. And now back to your regularly scheduled. Back to sound bites. All right. Our next caller is Ed from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question? No time for Ed? Oh, this clock is... I always forget. This is not a real clock. I forget. I'm looking at the clock up here, which is not the real clock. I keep forgetting that. You can't pay attention to that clock.
I'll advance that one 5 minutes.
There's like 17... yeah, there's like 17 clocks in this place. All of them is displaying different times, none of which are the right time. Ed, I'm sorry you'll have to hold on until the other side of the thing. Don't play with that clock anymore. Cheese and crackers. Now we got Chris wandering around playing with clocks. Step away from the clock.
Advance it 2 minutes, and then it'll be right for a little while.
All right. I'll just ignore that clock from now on. We're going to take a break. God knows I need one. While you listen to all the news, weather, sports, all the stuff that you really listen to Wham for, we'll be back on the other side of that with all the more interesting stuff that we do. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who again comes in here every week, whether he comes in every week. Rob Linton, I beg your pardon, Rob. I got the look. You have no idea. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. 58 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. I'm very excited to say that the webcam has caught up with the show. We will now be redoing the entire first hour, desperately trying to sync ourselves up with the webcam.
And we'll keep doing it until we get it right.
You just grab the mic. We're there.
You're good, Nick.
Thank you. All right. As you know, every week we have a poll on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was about IMAX. There's actually a company that has formed to put IMAX movies on cell phones. I don't care how good your iPhone is, IMAX movies are not the thing to watch on it. Anyway, the question, the poll was IMAX movies on your cell phone, and we had, I just clicked on the wrong thing somewhere. It doesn't matter. Anyway, we had 249 of you vote. The overwhelming majority said, what are you on, and do you have more? This week's poll was about... an interesting thing from the paper, Apple has achieved a milestone as the company outstripped Walmart to become America's number one music retailer, the first time that a supplier of digital downloads has ever beaten the big CD dealers. Apple's claim is based on the latest data from the market research firm NPD Group. The survey counted every 12 digital downloads as one whole CD, which I think is a little... specious, but all right, and excluded mobile music sales and sales revenue. Apple reckoned it has 50 million customers, which helped its iTunes platform sell over 4 billion tracks since launching in 2003. This is due in no small part to the immense popularity of the iPod. According to the LA Times, NPD Group analyst Russ Krupnik predicted that Apple's music industry power would only continue. If you look at what is happening in the CD and the growth of the digital side is a pattern that's going to hold, he said. The announcement validates an earlier report from Ars Technica, which reckoned Apple had earned a 19% share of all U.S.-based retail music sales in January, just good enough to push it past industry leader Walmart, which secured a 15% share for the same period. An NDP survey that had been released in February had shown that iTunes had muscled its way to the number two spot in 2007, outdoing Best Buy. So the poll is, I buy my music from iTunes, Walmart, a regular music store, or buy music. How quaint. So far, and I'm the first 100 things I got from people were about how I had missed their favorite choice.
Yeah.
I tried the 6 or 7 of them, and the whole point is I didn't care about all of those. I just cared about the ones in the story. That's all I actually cared about. I'm actually disappointed in myself that I put in buy music, how quaint, although that is the number one choice, as I knew it would be, with 44% of the votes, followed by a regular music store, followed by iTunes, followed by Walmart with only 9 votes out of 99.
Yeah, I've seen this on some different polls and different panels talking about it. We're all of an age where we grew up expecting to have to pay for our music.
Right.
But all the kids today expect to steal it for free. So, you know, what are they going to be like when they grow up and then their kids?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. My daughter buys her songs.
Because she has a good role model.
Thank you very much. She also likes
her mother. No.
Exactly. She has a good role model in that she's acquisitive like I am. She wants to own the CD. Mm-hmm. She wants to read the lyrics in the book. She wants to be able to look at the booklet. You know, we own what you've got a physical thing to touch, to fondle, to feel. We're very acquisitive that way. Stuff that you download is just like, yeah, who cares?
We're a tactile family.
Exactly. When you're done with your poll, I know that just clicking a button is not enough for you people. So if you look in the little yellow box underneath the poll, you can click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Was that Howard Dean? Sorry. Anyway, that was
Wilhelm.
That was Wilhelm.
Of course
it was. And you can leave an opinion. Up to 256 characters, actually fewer than, so it's up to, I guess, 255 characters. And you can leave an opinion there. Take a look at what I do on my website. I have a newsletter that I put out, unfortunately, irregularly the last couple of weeks. Things have been it's a new quarter at work, and things have just been crazed. I'm taking a course, and we're doing all this other stuff, so it's a little much. But if you're a member of Ask Nick, which is only $1,500 a month,
$1,500.
Pretty cheap at half the price, wouldn't it be?
I should think so.
All right, $15 a year. I keep making up numbers in my head because I'd really like it to be a lot more. $15 a year. You can search through the old things, which is worth everything. You can play around in our forums. And then come on back to the Soundbites forums, where some of the coolest things are happening right now. In the Soundbites forums, the only place I go anymore because I'm tired of the complaining, under fun stuff, we've got the new game, Find This, already up to 35 screens worth, and somebody will post a picture, and you have to tell who's in the picture or what the picture is or all of that stuff, and then you're it next. You have to post the next picture, and we've got 35 screens of that, and it's going great guns. So far, Dolores is just she's got more points than the next 3 people combined. She's scary. She's a sweetheart. I've met her. I love her. She is scary. She is scary.
In what way?
She's just smart. She's fast.
Oh, okay.
Somebody posts a picture, 4 seconds later, she's, oh, well, that's clearly blah, 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 blah. And it's frightening to me. But that's our Dolores, and we love her. So we're having that fun game in there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, Ed, who has been patiently holding from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ed. Thank you for holding. What's your question?
Well, my question is, I use Thunderbird, and people will send me pictures as an attachment, and whenever I double-click on them, the program that opens the picture is Photoshop, and I'd like it to be the unit for the...
This is actually very common. The last image viewer you installed becomes the default image viewer for all images.
Oh, great.
You can change that using the file association properties. The easiest way to do it is to right-click on a graphic file, and there's
not in your mail, but on your hard drive. So
it might work in the mail too.
It depends on what mail you're using, but yeah. I wouldn't trust it.
And then there's an open with command, and you can choose a different program. And there's a checkbox that says always open with, so you can change the association. Unfortunately, you have to change it for every graphic type:
yeah.
TIFF, JPEG, GIF, whatever.
Oh wow!
Every graphic type has to be changed.
We never said it'd be easy.
The other thing you can sometimes do is reinstall the graphic viewer of your choice, and then it will take over all of the graphic formats.
Okay.
And what Irfan View is a kind of popular graphic viewer
and
for most graphic formats. Yep. Mm-hmm. MS Paint. Although this week I was trying to find the Windows picture and what are they called? Picture and Fax Viewer.
Right.
It's not a program. It's a shared DLL that the Run DLL launches, so you can't assign the Windows File and Picture Manager to a file or picture.
Right.
If it gets unassigned, you're out of luck.
Yep.
So you can pick any other graphic program you want to use to view those graphic files.
All right, great. I'll try that.
Sure. There you go.
Hey, thank you very much.
Very similar thing on the Mac in the Get Info window, where you right-click and choose Open With. You can choose which program you want to open a specific type of file.
Right. All right, our next caller, Ed in Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
First of all, thank you for taking my call, gentlemen.
No, thank you.
You're welcome. I have a IBM T41, and my home wireless network is, I utilize a Belkin 802.11b router. I have it encrypted with 128-bit encryption. My problem is that I may keep a connection for a number of days, and then for no particular rhyme or reason, I lose that connection, and I end up hacking off the neighbor's open connections, and then mysteriously it'll come back.
You're running XP, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. This happens with XP. I have noticed it on a number of machines.
Yep.
It just essentially gets confused. What happens is when you connect to the network, you get what's called a lease that has a certain length of time. You can increase that length of time in the Belkin router, by the way.
Okay.
And what happens is it then has to renew that every once in a while. It seems that with XP in particular, when you are connecting to an encrypted network, every once in a while, it gets confused and cannot reconnect to that encrypted connection. So it looks for another one, and if it finds it, then you win and you're hacking into your neighbor. But it's a problem with XP that has never been fixed. It is not common, but it does happen. Now, I have heard that one way to fix it is to go down to 64-bit encryption. I suppose that will fix it. Well, but that's completely worthless. You can break that with your watch, for heaven's sake. So I don't know that I would make that choice, but right now, I guess the thing is, go into your Belkin, set the lease time for as long as it will let you, and then the problem will happen less often. That's the best solution I have for you at this time.
Okay. I don't do a lot of banking and personal PIN numbers or any of that over the internet. So you're also saying that I might get a little bit more reliability with 64-bit encryption?
You might, but then again, 64-bit encryption is about the same as no encryption.
Okay.
So anyone else could break into your network. Well, wouldn't really need to break in. They could get into your network very easily, steal your information, steal your files, things like
that. Right. 128-bit encryption is the minimum encryption you should have.
Now,
but you need to be aware that XP sometimes has a little problem.
Isn't there an option in Windows to not automatically connect to other networks?
Yes.
And that doesn't work?
ish, but that doesn't help him at all, really, because then he has no connection.
Right.
Opposed to somebody else's connection.
I think if he goes into the Belkin.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Go into the Belkin and extend the length of time that it keeps the IP address for you before renewing it. That's your best bet.
Another idea is to just plug in a wire plug. Use a cable between the laptop and the Belkin for those times when you're putting sensitive information through it.
Yeah, then you're not going wireless, and there's less chance of that data getting sniffed.
Yep. But that that is the only thing right now that you can really do to fix that. Sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you. I've been having actually that same problem at home. I have a high-end encryption, and I've got a Linksys router, so it's not actually to do with the Belkin at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the router. It's Windows. And I have that problem. My machine is hardwired. My daughter's machine is hardwired. My Linux system never has a problem, my Linux laptop. But my wife's machine, which is wireless, does have the problem, and there's just simply no fix for it. It's the most annoying thing that I have ever seen in my entire life. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, And me, Nick Francesco. It's 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We are Soundbites. Apple is facing another class action lawsuit, this time in regarding the latest release of 20-inch iMacs and their inability to properly display millions of colors. The lawsuit was filed by Chandra Saunders, a Texas resident and unhappy Mac owner. In her lawsuit, she claimed that Apple knows that the iMac monitors can only display 252,144 true colors, which is really, for me, colors are either more or less than a big box of Crayolas. That's really it for me. I'm 252,000. I couldn't name them.
The
so
64 colors.
The 64
the
colors.
Classic
right.
64.
Right. They had a box, big box with 128 in it, and yeah. I had no idea. I was frozen solid. I had no idea what color to pick to do things with. So I stuck to the 64s after
catatonic.
That. She is upset that Apple knew that the iMac monitors could only display 252,144 true colors, despite constantly marketing the iMacs as displaying millions of colors on its website and in its marketing material. The merit of the case against Apple, the merits are a little fishy. Apple uses a tech sleight of hand in the way it creates colors. It tricks you into seeing millions of colors by using illusions of sorts. To create a desired shade, the iMac shows flickers between similar shades at high speeds to give the illusion of a desired shade. My first reaction, of course, was the obvious big deal. But the difference between 262,144 true colors and millions of true colors is supposedly crippling for video and picture editing because of the lack of smooth colors.
Well, the iMac is a consumer computer.
The lawsuit mentions that the 27-inch iMac is not affected by the color differential.
There is no 27-inch.
Whatever.
It might have been 24.
Which is mighty peculiar. As stated earlier, the problem lies with the monitor, so why would Apple use such different monitors for the 20-inch and 27, or as Steve calls it, the 24? Inch IMAX. So the big question is, I think, a legal one. 252,144 colors may be enough on a consumer model, but when Apple tells you it's millions of colors and it isn't, that's where the problem lies.
Well, and also this is old news. Was it a year ago, 2 years ago, the same issue came out?
Well, apparently it was not resolved to Chandra Saunders.
It may not have been resolved yet. So he can't make a new lawsuit for one that's already going on, can he?
She can try anything once.
Yeah. Well, it depends if it got marked as a class action.
Well, this person is in Texas. Pretty much anything goes there.
Yeah, in Texas. And then the same thing happened, 5 years ago with the Palm? Remember when the first Palm came out and it had 65,000 colors? No, it was only 48,000. Okay.
Right. So we'll see, but that's...
You can only see a few hundred colors at the same time.
That's what I'm telling you. If you can't name that color, I don't care if you can see that color. I guess it's got a Pantone shade, yes. And it's like having perfect pitch. There are some people who can actually see all those colors. As you get older, it all blurs into shades of gray anyway. So what difference does it make? But the reality is that most people can't see those colors. Oh, good. He stepped away from the mic. Let's at least step this in the... Oh. He's back.
So it's basically someone looking for a quick buck on a lawsuit.
Yeah, that's I don't know. Well, I mean, he or she may well just be really porked off. It comes back to that thing I've said many, many times before. It's the Apple backlash. People trust Apple, perhaps too much. I mean, at bottom, they are just the company that sells stuff to you. But people tend to trust them more than they trust IBM or Microsoft or anybody.
Because in the past, they've been trustworthy.
Well, but even so, when somehow that trust is violated, it's worse.
Yes.
You know, when Microsoft violates your trust, you think, oh, Tuesday. When Apple violates your trust, you think, oh, what happened?
Right.
It cuts you to the core.
You're right.
And people get very upset about it.
The article I read said that technology used for these monitors actually only looks at 6 bits of information.
Right, as opposed to an 8-bit.
And they're offering 32 bits.
Per color.
It's 6 bits per color rather than 8 bits per color in a 32-bit color space.
Okay.
So you're only seeing 24 bits of color on a standard CRT, which has been the thing in the past, which is 16 million colors at 2 to the 24th. Right. In a 32-bit color space, those extra 8 bits are often used for an alpha channel for transparency and effects. But on LCD panels, it's much cheaper to make a 6-bit per color panel, Which is why they're used in lower-end laptops and consumer-grade monitors. And the 8-bit monitors are more expensive. And I did just find, in May of 2007, this guy, Fred Greaves and Dave Gately, filed a suit over the same issue, and Apple settled that suit March 26th.
Of this year.
So
it's time for a new one.
It's time for a new one.
Well, yep. The old one was settled.
Well, what's the settlement, Steve?
That's I'm looking farther down.
Well, but again, it comes back to if you buy a laptop from anybody else or a desktop from anybody else and you discover it's 6-bit color rather than 8-bit color, you may be disappointed. You may even call up the company for restitution. But, you know, well, that's business. That's the way things are done. When it's Apple, it cuts you to the quick. Almost said
to the
core.
And almost worse for Apple because their big niche is the graphic arts industry.
Right.
Where color is important.
Oh, yes.
So get the pro machine that has 8 bits per color and not the consumer machine that may not.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, you know yourself that people don't read that. You know, Apple nowhere in their literature says not for professionals.
Yeah.
Right. So
that's true. And they call it an 8-bit color space machine.
And that's, I think, what they're saying.
Well, the machine
is. They call it 8-bit color.
The machine is capable of displaying 8 bits per color. It depends on what monitor you hook up to it.
No, we're talking about IMAX. So it's a machine.
Right. Right.
Well, actually,
it comes with the machine.
It just says support for millions of colors. It doesn't go into any more definition than that.
Yeah. Well, now see, you're weaseling. And that's what people don't like about Apple when they start to weasel. That, again, breaks the trust. All right, our next caller is Bruce on a cell phone. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Not too bad. I actually sent you guys an email through one of your websites last Monday. I have had, and maybe I got it fixed because I reinstalled the printer software, but I had an issue where for about 3 weeks from two separate computers. We have a home network. My son's is a Dell desktop that's hardwired into our network, and my wife is a Toshiba laptop that's wireless. And they had printed out documents. My son, a English paper from his computer, and then my wife, a couple of documents that she had prepared. And out of the blue, they just kept printing out multiple copies periodically. The first thing I did, of course, was go in and check the printer queues, and which were empty on both machines, but this kept happening over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
I tried unplugging the printer, unplugging the JetDirect on the printer, and it just kept happening when I plugged it back in. Now, like I said, about 3 days ago, I said, this is ridiculous, and maybe if I uninstall the software, reinstall this HP 1200N printer, maybe that'll do it on those two machines.
Right.
And it hasn't printed out since.
Well, you've got a couple of problems here. First, you're using HP software.
Yeah, HP makes really good printers.
Yeah,
really good printers. And really crappy software.
Yeah, really crappy software.
Well, I've had the printer for about 8 years, and it's never done anything like this before.
Well, it's not the printer. It's the drivers. Mm-hmm. HP makes lousy, lousy, lousy drivers.
Especially that two-way HP communication thing where your printer can tell the computer, oh, I'm out of paper.
Well, yeah, you can tell that by looking at the printer. It needs up resources, too.
Right. So my suggestion has always been don't install that stuff. Just use the drivers.
The HP will have a driver only. Yep. The other one they call full-featured driver, and one is printing only.
Right.
Which is the printing only one is actually better because it doesn't load all the fluff.
And have you done an update to the drivers recently?
No, I haven't actually. I've just used the software off the original disk.
Yeah. What could have happened, did you have a paper jam? Most printers.
No.
Yeah, it might have thought there was. Most printers, when there's a paper jam, it'll ask you to clear the jam, and then it reprints that job that jammed. Maybe the printer thought there was a jam, and
it
needed to reprint it.
What likely happened was in your son printed multiple copies, right?
No, he only printed, one copy at a time as he edited it.
Yeah, the other thing that sometimes happens is you tell it to print, and then when it doesn't instantly, you tell it to print again.
Mm-hmm.
And then print again and print again, and suddenly there's five jobs.
Well, but that wouldn't also, you know, make everybody else.
But then they wouldn't show in the queue either.
Right. But what I have seen is that when somebody sends a multiple copies job to the printer, the HP software, rather than printing multiple copies of that job, sets the printer to do multiple copies and then sends the job.
But it's really odd because
the problem is it sometimes doesn't unset it correctly. See, at the end, it would say, okay, print four copies. Then at the end of the job, say, okay, go back to printing only one copy. Mm. And sometimes going back to doesn't work.
Now, I didn't have any issue with printing things from my own desktop computer. So you know, it only was from these two other computers.
Then their software had to have gotten...
Yeah, changed or something.
Changed
Double
somehow.
Check the settings and all that in there.
I don't know how it happened, but that was what had to have happened. It has to be
Yeah, because
the
you've
HP
already,
you've already
done the detective work and found that you just said that you can print okay from yours, so that it eliminates that, you know, there's a driver issue is per se with the actual driver, and that the printer is working. So it's got to be something that's set up on those two machines that got changed. And this is where you got to play the detective work and go through all the settings and check everything. And plan on it. I wouldn't spend today doing it. It's too nice to, you know, after they're done with the show.
That's a rainy day project.
Because this could eat up good afternoon of you just doing detective work or do it later on tonight. But, yeah, that can be, you know.
All right, our next caller is Mike.
That's the great thing about HP printers is they last for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
And the drivers
don't. But it is the slowest software to install.
Yeah. And takes
uninstall.
So much memory.
They're good printers, though.
They're good printers. All right, our next caller is Mike from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hey, Nick, how you doing? Love your show.
Thank you so much.
I had a question, surprisingly, on an HP printer, which I do like.
There's a shot.
I'm sorry about that, but it's about a year old. It's a PhotoSmart all-in-one. It's probably the cheapest but the greatest printer I've ever had. Now, what I've got is it's running through a Dell desktop that is on Win98 SE, which I really realize is old, but also through that got a router and a laptop running XP. Now, the question is, I've noticed lately when I've looked at printers, a lot of the printers say that they're network ready. What's the difference between one that's not and one that is?
Well, the network ready one will probably have a network cable jack in it.
Yeah.
You can plug
card.
The printer right into the network itself, into the router.
In other words, it's got an Ethernet connector on it.
Exactly.
Yeah, some of them are Ethernet, some of them have Wi-Fi now.
Right. So you can put it anywhere and connect it up directly to the network. If it's Wi-Fi, you can put it anywhere. And then it's got its own built-in, essentially, print server, you know, and an X amount of RAM, maybe not a lot, but enough to let you print directly to the printer.
So you got
to
set it up on the network and set up sharing and all that.
Yep.
Well, and directly connected printers can be shared to your network. It's technically not networked, it's shared, and the other computers see it slightly differently. But
it doesn't need a host computer then.
Right. It doesn't need a host computer. Right. It essentially is its own host computer.
Well, my question is, it's probably going to be no, but is there any way I can run my printer, which is about a year old and not network ready, directly on the network?
Yes.
No.
There are print servers
HP
you can buy.
Print servers.
But the print servers typically work best with the brand of printer they're from. So HP printers would need an HP print server.
Right.
Epson printers need an Epson. There are generic print servers, but it's sort of you try it, hope it works.
Right. But if you were to go out and buy an HP print server, whether wired or wireless, that should work very well with your machine.
What do they go to ballpark? What do they go for a print server?
$50.
Yeah.
Okay.
Check the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, you might find a used one better. The other issue, too, is some printers cannot be connected to a share like that. In fact, a lot of HP printers can't because we think that they purposely limit that, so you buy their HP network printer.
Right.
So you
have
to check
that,
too.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Rake, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite. Hey, we were talking about this earlier. Here it comes. Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates on Friday indicated that Windows 7, the next major version of Windows, could come within the next year, far ahead of the development schedule previously indicated by the software maker. In response to a question about Windows Vista, Gates, speaking before the Inter-American Development Bank, said sometime in the next year or so, we will have a new version. Referring to Windows 7, the code name for the next full release of Windows client software, Gates said, I'm super enthused about what it will do in a lot of ways. Most of Gates' speech was devoted to topics closer to home for the crowd, such as how Latin America can be more competitive. But Windows 7 and its intended feature list have been the topic of speculation since Microsoft discussed some details of the new software last summer. At that time, Microsoft said little except that Windows 7 will ship in consumer and business versions and in 32-bit and 64-bit versions. The company also confirmed that it is considering a subscription model to complement Windows, but did not provide specifics or a time frame. On Friday, a Microsoft representative said that the company expected to ship the successor to Windows Vista roughly 3 years from Vista's January 2007 debut. Unclear whether is whether Gates was referring to early testing of Windows 7 as opposed to a widespread release or debut. An early test geared toward developers would be conceivable. The company has repeatedly said that will accelerate the development of new Windows versions, largely as a response to Windows Vista's roughly five-year gestation period. Vista, the current version of Windows, has sold well, according to Microsoft. But the operating system's debut was marred by repeated delays and shifting feature lists. Last week, Microsoft stepped up efforts to drive adoption of Vista by businesses. So I think, Dave, for just possibly the first and maybe even last time ever, you were right. It looks like Vista will be the ME of the 21st century.
I told you.
So we'll see how that plays out. I'm running a Vista system because I'm testing it because we're eventually going to be rolling out for a network.
Hear me now, remember me later.
I'm not impressed. Huh? I'm not impressed.
I know.
I'm not impressed by operating systems anymore anyway. I'm just jaded. I'm an old curmudgeon, I admit it. I just, fine.
Well, you found a system that works.
I found Linux.
My point exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm very pleased with it. Yes.
I guess from the old days when we went to the 98 opening.
Right.
And that, we had so much fun. It was such a new operating system was offering so much.
No, it was 95, wasn't it?
Both 95 and 98. Right. 98 was a little bit bigger because we were there at Egghead.
Right.
But I mean, there was just so much going on, and we were just so hyped about it and that because of the features that were being added. And then the same with going from 98 to XP. We got rid of the limit of 128 mega memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone. Now you can throw as much memory at it.
Up to 4 gig.
That's pretty
much memory as most people are going
to
want.
Yeah, exactly. For the average. Well, I still contend, and nobody's been able to disagree with me yet, that 50% of the people out there don't use half the power that's in their average machine anyway.
Right, right.
In true multitasking and all that. So, to go from 98 to XP, there was the great issues. We got rid of the memory limit. Oh, we got rid of DOS. It's now NTFS. It's more efficient. It doesn't fragment as much. You don't have to do the disk scannings and all that defragging and all that that we used to have to do so much.
There were compelling reasons to buy it.
Exactly. Right. Now, when you go from XP to Vista, there they are.
Well, exactly. The major reason to buy it is so that you can upgrade your hardware so you can see eye candy.
Ooh.
And like I say, hello, they've got to wake up. We're in a recession. I don't care how much, the government wants to sit there and candy coat it and everything else. When it comes down to the average people like us,
It used to be just Bill Clinton. Now the entire government is debating what the meaning of is. Is it a recession or is it a depression or is it a low pressure area? I don't know what they all think it is.
It's just like Bob this past week was talking on his show about how they candy coat the unemployment records, the numbers. Again, you can come up with any statistic, any number, report it any way you want it.
Yeah, as Disraeli said, there are lies, damned lies, and statistics.
Yeah.
Do you know that if you've been on the books for more than, I think it's 6 months, they drop you off, they don't count you as being unemployed?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, there's one school of thought that says if somebody else is claiming there's a recession, just don't participate.
Yeah,
that's what I'm doing.
There you go. All right, go ahead.
To sit there and try to throw a system at folks that they can't really afford anyways, it's kind of stupid.
Well, and that's the problem. We've got a lot of older machines that I've got a phalanx of old machines running Linux that, you think, well, this machine is dead, but I'd rather run Linux on them. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get to all the folks waiting on the phone. It is 49 minutes after the hour. We're Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Okay, we're going to go right to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Nice show, as always.
Thank you.
I run a system similar to what you do. You got Linux. You don't have an encryption key. You're quite happy with it.
Yep.
I run an old version of Windows 2000 Pro. I don't have an encryption key. Most all my software that would work on XP also works on 2000.
You had a gentleman earlier talked about the abandonment issues with old software. Now, if you've got a good operating system like your Linux or Windows 2000, what kind of protection does the patents hold on that? Can people go out and write software for it and keep using it? They're so dissatisfied with Vista and all these other...
If you had a license for it, you can continue to use it. There doesn't seem to be an end date to the license. I shouldn't have said that. Microsoft will...
License versus copyright. The copyright is 75 years after the death of the copyright holder.
Right.
Well,
what he's saying is, can I continue to use it even though the new version is
out?
Yes, because your license continues to be
Microsoft
valid.
Microsoft is trying to stop that by, what was that business thing, the three-year business in school?
They want to give you a subscription
now. A subscription, not a license.
Right.
Yeah.
But right now, something like Windows 2K Pro has a license. You can continue to use it as long as you want. And if you want to write software for it, nobody's going to stop you. It's just that most people won't because most people have stopped using it.
Well, the thing I'm baffled about is so much software out there, when you go to purchase it, you'll see that it's backward compatible. It'll have, like, XP/2000 on it.
Right.
And I'm trying to think, well, geez, if this will work on 2000, it'll work on XP. I mean, for crying out loud.
That's because they haven't used anything specific to XP.
Right, and a lot of times it's because they don't test on older OS. We've seen that with 98 and 95.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They don't test it on that older machine. It may work, it may not work, Right. A lot of times the installer won't let it work because they don't want someone with 95 calling up and complaining.
All right. Thanks, Ed. Our next caller, Ray from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's your question?
How you doing, Nick?
Peachy.
Quick question on HP printers again. I have an HP PhotoSmart, and I'm running Windows Vista on an HP laptop. And it doesn't happen all the time, but I would say about every couple of weeks, every time I come home from 2 days away from the computer, you have to reinstall the HP printer. It just doesn't recognize it. Is that a common problem with Vista? I have a feeling it's a Vista problem, not HP.
It's a USB printer?
Yes.
That's common with USB. Oftentimes, you just, in fact, you may not need to reinstall the software. Just unplug it, wait a minute, plug it back in, and the USB auto detect will say, oh, here's a printer, I'll use it.
And again, it's also an issue with Vista. The drivers are there, they work, but, you know, are they bulletproof? No. They're still going to have issues, and that's been the big complaint. I mean, some folks say, yeah, they've been putting the drivers out there, and they should work. The operative word being should. You know, I mean...
Yeah. No, I never had a problem with Windows 98, you know.
Right, it's Vista.
It's Vista.
Yeah.
All right. All right, well, I guess that's all I can ask. I've talked to HP on it, and they run you through hours and hours on and off.
Yeah, they're not going to admit that the drivers are lousy or the software is lousy. They're just going to say, yeah, let's run through the diagnostics. And you'll be the only person who's ever had that problem, ever.
Yeah, we've never heard about that before.
Right, exactly. Our next caller is Tom from Canandaigua. Tom, they're all in Canandaigua today. How are you, Tom? What's your question?
You know, it must be HP printer day or something like that. I've got a HP LaserJet 5000.
Yeah.
Real sturdy machine. Just went from a PC to a Mac. I crossed over.
Right.
And I love the Mac, but I keep having trouble with this LaserJet in that it intermittently just stops working, and I have to... What I just found today, actually, I left the house, restarted the computer. When I came back, my print job was done. But it'll only do, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 different parts or pages and then stop, and computer says ready, but it's not accepting any print jobs. So it seems like restart on the Mac gets it going again. But have you heard of this before? Is there anything I can do?
How is the printer connected to the computer?
Well, you know, it was a printer like serial port on the machine itself, but I have a USB connection on
that. You've got a serial to USB adapter?
Yes, I do.
That's probably the problem.
So what shall I do?
Get a new printer.
Awesome.
You need to have a native connection, either Ethernet or USB, on the printer. If it's the 5000N, then it has a network card in it, or you can add the network card to the printer and make it a native network printer, and then it should work a lot better. The USB to serial and USB to parallel adapters often don't work well.
All right. That appears to be it for us. Chris, you had something you wanted to say?
Happy birthday, Alex.
Everybody's legal today now. That's all. It's all good there in the Reich household. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who's not only a fully legal family, but also gets away from them every week by coming here and I'm sure that's not the motive, by coming here and giving us of his expertise and his talents to actually get the whole thing running and do the forums. Rob Linton, who gives up his expertise while he sits there chewing gum. I'm Nick Francesco, back next week on Soundbites 1180 WHAM.